read that section. But essentially, I think, yeah, this is a deep ambivalence because if I'm saying Christian social ethics is where there... What? Yes. So if I'm saying it's where there are communities that are using their inheritance to, you know, produce responses that in some way answer the sense of God, and yet I'm also saying, but look, the churches in general, they look pretty pitiable. You don't find it anywhere. I think what you end up having is the kind of double sense of church that we see in Bonhoeffer and we see in King, where there's all kinds of ecclesial reality or moral reality. The real, authentic moral community is outside the church, and yet they both hold on to the church for interpretive reasons. They need that lexicon to be able to say where that real moral community is. So I think that there's, and that's not a solution. I think that's just the. That's a tension that I think runs through our two most interesting social thinkers of the 20th century because it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I mean, you read, you know, Nancy Fraser and multiple public spheres. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems like the solution to Habitus is that we're multiple subject positions, we have multiple voices, and this community that you talk about. I mean, that's why I understand now why you're reading West. You asked me about West before, like, oh, that sounds like, I mean, that's this notion of, like, being disruptive. Voices.
Is there a follow-up?
I mean, that was a follow-up. Just thinking about, like, you know, thinking about Nancy Fraser and multiple public spheres, and that this notion that, you know, obviously, you know this, right, that the community is not, and I actually don't mean monochromatic in terms of race, but the community is not monochromatic in terms of race. They're not all thinking with the same resources. And so that's why I asked that question about that category. And so, like, Fraser talking about multiple public spheres and a counter-public, I feel like is really useful because a counterpublic is still might be against the dominant idea, but it's still committed to being public. And so you talking about really, like, how can you have a problem that challenges the very notion of habitus? Well, her notion of counterpublic, you have a counterpublic that recognizes the dominating structures of the public and don't allow for the experience of the counterpublic. But what makes the counterpublic public is counter, but it's still committed to the idea of transforming.
That's right. That's good.
So you need transformation.
Right.
Anyway,
no, that is. No, I need more lectures.
So, Will, I'm a big fan of this project of yours. It's, you know, because I think it matters. Like, I think it matters what you're working on. I think these are pragmatic problems that exist. And you're working on trying to frame them and shape them and offer solutions to it. And I think part of why you've written so much and wondered so much about it is these are kind of unsolvable on one hand. And I think your book may end up being a step in the right direction without being the whole picture.
Yeah, if it was the whole picture, it would defeat the theory, wouldn't it?
Well, in some ways, yeah. Right? It's kind of, it's going to be a book that's going to be like buying carbon offset. Right?
Oh! Like, I don't, like, or you can carbon offset.
I know how you feel about that. Yeah. But I think there's, it's a step, right?
Like, your car has a carbon offset sticker on it.
What else are you going to do?
Right, but just, like, so what else are you going to do? Well, the thing is, you're going to write this book. You can write it, well, we can't. Right? So it's going to be a step in the right direction for us.
Okay.
And I think part of that for you, like the Ecuador piece is what I'm thinking about. Like, why did you go to Ecuador? I was talking about this with Manuel before. In Manuel de Tongale's Sacrifice for Africa, he talks about that the greatest failure of Christian social ethics presently is a failure of imagination. Mm-hmm. And I think you went to Ecuador to have your imagination stirred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Valerie's going to call this the moving of the spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, and others. Right? That you want to see how God was working how God was working around the world to see how that informs how God's working for the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any response to that. I'm not really a question from there, but that's what your presentation would be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. I'll take that as an edifying encouragement. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
Just on this God, no.
Again, maybe more of a comment than a question, but I'm interested in what you think about it. So it struck me as you were talking, you said that there's a moment where you said the work of an ethicist is to criticize and to cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
But what I heard you saying actually was that the work of an ethicist is to help people see things somehow. So, and that when you're traveling to these different places and you're kind of experiencing imaginative ways, creative ways of kind of putting ideas together and, in fact, doing something practical, that is helping you to see other situations in new ways, to see new connections, and that maybe one of the themes themes I've felt throughout a lot of the talks we've had is that ethnography is really good at, can be really good at that if well crafted. A story or a narrative can help people see things in their own reality they might not
notice,
mm-hmm. with a clarity that they might not have.
Mm.
And that this is, can be what, one way of identifying the wound. So this kind of idea that there can be wounds with us and we're so unaware of them, like we just don't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a story about ourselves reflected to us through an ethnography can help you see something,
mm-hmm.
which is just the first step,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this case, it's seeing, I'm learning and seeing through the problem. So the frame here is trying to learn about climate change or homelessness through some form of participation in a community that's responding. So I think what I'm looking for is not so much to understand the story that that a particular community bears, but to try and understand the problem in ways that will be helpful to others. Yeah. Of course, the more places you go, and it gets more complicated, right? I mean, the great advantage, actually, of doing like eco-theology in a sort of more systematic way that I did before is that you just know, okay, climate change is evil, right? It's a sin against God, and, you know, it's an empire, it's Babylon. Okay, done, right? So you don't have to really think about the multiple interpretations of it, the different kinds of contestations of justice within it. Doing something closer to the ground makes it muddier.
So maybe the idea of seeing seems more static than I need it to.
Yeah.
I think really seeing is something creative and something that happens when you're involved and when you're participating and when you're a witness.
Mm.
Well, Jesus said that's the first task of ethics is description, and that's in the middle of town. Who says that, isn't it? Richard Niebuhr.
Richard Niebuhr, what is going on? Yeah. Yeah, I make a big thing about that. No, towns, yes, okay. But here's, so towns does that, but how I differ from what I think towns, how she responds to that. So she definitely says, and William Schweiker does it, and Larry Rasmussen does it, so there's this whole generation of contemporary social ethicists that respond to big problems from what they understand as a description of reality, right? But in my view, it's what I would call a cosmological strategy, right? So they see how these problems are funded by misuse of religious and cultural symbols, and then they propose solutions for that, mainly at the symbolic level, therapeutic solutions, right? And I'm trying to work a little bit differently. So I'm trying to work with live strategies of response that may not look for you know, one-to-one sort of relationship between the problems and the symbol, but look for the patterns of action that are sustained by a sort of repertory of symbols. So it's different, but it's much more modest, too. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I can't say climate change is the evil empire of oil like Michael Northcott does, because he's working this.
But it sounds like you're dissatisfied with some. I mean, when you were talking, I thought, just because my students just read this, of that chapter in Power Wash where he talks about save the baby homes.
Save the baby home. I don't know.
Yeah, there's this chapter where he's talking about method, and he says, and he starts talking about Jerry Falwell, and this is this very 80s moment where Falwell has these homes for that the church is raising money for the Save the Baby Home, so that young women who get pregnant and don't want to have the baby don't need to have an abortion, that they can stay in these homes for as long as the baby's adopted. And Harwath begins with this kind of, you know, because Falwell's a kook, right? But, and so basically says that. And begins with this example saying, if Christians are going to develop creative solutions, this is in Harwath, where he says, you know, Christian ethics is not about shoving as much, getting Constantine to swallow as much Christian ethics before, or getting Caesar to swallow as much Christian ethics before Caesar chokes. So this idea that a Christian ethicist's job is not to convince the government or convince the population, but to model creative solutions.
Mm.
And for him, that was the most creative and right solution, even though it wasn't going to have this huge effect.
Mm-hmm.
But save the baby homes, and that's an authentic Christian response, because this is what your commitment is, and this is what you do. And so it's the authenticity of it. It's not for Harwath, and I'm not a huge Harwath fan, but that's what I was hearing. But for Harwath, the the criterion is not whether or not it's effective, but whether or not it's true, right? Which is what's irritating about him, I think. But
yeah.
But these examples you gave are really true.
Yeah, I'll have to look at that. I'm quite mean to Howard Watson in this section of the chapter, so that would be complicating. All right.
Well, it seems to me, just in answering the question, is this good theology? And I certainly don't have any stake in claiming that, though I'd like you to be part of the journey. But I think it is simply because, live theology seems to me at its basic level is sort of an invitation to look outside of the what you call the incompetence of the church, but maybe even the incompetence of theological ethical discourse to probe and understand certain set of questions. Mm-hmm. And those questions have to be identified at the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
It's not identifiable with a method or an ethnographic strategy or really even an ecclesial kind of aim. But it's a project governed by a vivid set of theological questions that require a kind of research that moves one beyond the inherited discourse of theological and ethical studies, which strikes both of us as having great limitations. And it seems to me that vivid set of theological questions is what's taking you to these places.
Mm.
It's not a particular method. It's not that you've got this thing scripted out. It's a process of discovery. It's a kind of reportage, even, if you will. But within that, with that set of questions, that set of questions offers you a framework, more or less, within which these sort of underground decisions about how to use methods and ethnography and non-theological ethical sources, kind of make sense as you try them, some fail, and you try others and they work, and you piece them together in novel ways. That doesn't add up to a model for a method that you can then pass on. But it is a spirit. It is a it is a conquest.
Yeah.
It is a a theological enterprise.
Mm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.